Blog Talk Radio.
Young. We are live on Social Justice Initiative. We are waiting on Detective Mike Green. I think the entire atmosphere is a little busy. Everybody's watching the news. Everybody's watching social media. We have some extremely serious and I would say almost frightening events that have happened in some of the regions. And, you know, police violence against the citizens have become just such an outrage. We've got kids, I want to call them kids, because anyone that doesn't have a chance to fight for their life and they're someone else's child. We got Philando Castile was fatally shot during a traffic stop. The claims were they wanted his license. And I can just tell you, often if you're pulled over, and I've done this, my purse is often locked in the trunk. And I will tell them, you know, you go ahead and open that trunk, because I don't want to risk them thinking I have a gun. And, you know, this is a year anniversary to Ferguson. And that is what's scary about it. It's like it's repeating itself in time. And I just think that we should have done something with Mike Brown. There should have been some type of justice or punishment for Mike, for Darren Wilson, and we may not be here today. There's no guarantee of that, but I think it would have been a deterrent for this kind of conduct with the police departments all over the world. Then we have the other gentleman that was shot. And so we're just going on and on and on. And we've got officers standing up. We've got people standing up all over the country, because we understand that this cannot go on. We have Tamar Rice. We have so many cases that are not settled yet. That it's ridiculous. Alton Sterling is another one. You know, we've had two in 48 hours. It's in the southern region. And we just can't keep going on like this. Officers, you've got to do something. That's Detective. He's trying to get in. He's trying to get in. Hasn't been. Hold on. Sorry about that, everybody. I mean, he is a detective. He's like all over the place, so we just gotta love him through it. We're lucky to have him at RHL. He's gonna join us for your time. If you haven't seen it yet, it's up on talktainmentradio.com. Our new show, Your Time, is up on the air. Keep trying, Officer Green. We're here. It's up on talktainment.com. We've been having some really innovative conversations. Did you know there were 16 cities or 15 cities in Ohio that bed bugs are an epidemic? And I found out from the owner of Talktainment that this broke like 3 years ago, and it's not contained yet, the bed bug issue. And so we're going to have to keep hitting on that. I'm not sure what's going on, but I can't pull him through. But we love Detective Green. Hey, it's a shout out to you.
Can you hear me?
Is that Detective?
Yeah, because we had some technical difficulties.
God.
Yeah.
Listen, we're going to have to get you to call in earlier so you can go through this, like, you know, for 5 minutes before the show starts.
Yeah.
Because we know you're absolutely busy, but if you start, like, at 6:25, then you can get through all them issues.
Oh, yeah, I hope.
Yeah, you hope. So we love you. Oh, my God. We're so lucky to have you. Yeah, we're so lucky to have you at RHL Ministry Radio. And, of course, we're bringing you on to your time. We figured out a way to do it yesterday. I just found out, like, 1 o'clock in the morning to get you in. So we're going to bring you in. Oh, you're welcome. We worked on it last night, like, into the wee hours. But will you talk to us honestly about what's going on in the atmosphere?
Oh, yeah. You mean a reference to these 2 shootings, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, you're an officer, and we're kind of, we want to keep trusting you, but, you know, we're thinking you all are crazy.
Yeah, well, you know what? I looked at, I guess we got a total of 3 videos here. I've 2 from Louisiana and the 1 from Minnesota. So, you know, I can kind of break down both incidents, but to me, both incidents are very different. I'll start by saying the Minnesota incident, as far as I can see, and when I say I looked at the video, I mean, I looked at it times so I could analyze, you know, as much as possible. And, the Minnesota shooting looks to be, to me, of course, there needs to be further investigation, but from what we have, that looks to be just the officer was just 100% wrong. It looks like, a situation where, I don't know, you had an officer that was inexperienced, maybe nervous or scared, and maybe that nervousness and fear is because maybe he had some, you know, predetermined prejudice.
That's Philando Castile in Falcon Heights.
Say again?
That's Philando Castile, the one in Falcon Heights that was sitting in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you talking about, okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about that one, yeah, Falcon Heights, Minnesota, yeah. Yeah, that one looked pretty clear, you know, full judgment, so everything, you know, investigation complete, but that looked pretty clear that the officer, he was totally in the wrong, and, you know, it seemed like he just probably shouldn't have been a cop, in the sense of, you know, you pull over a vehicle for a taillight, broken taillight, and, you know, you walk up to the vehicle, the man inside the vehicle says, "Hey, I have a carry permit," you know, as millions of Americans do. And, you know, he makes it known. I've got a gun on me. I've got a permit and a gun on me, you know, legitimately. That's a good thing, you know, as an officer, when you approach a car for somebody to tell you that. And people tell officers that to prevent, you know, a situation like this from happening, when off seeing a gun on the person, you know. So from there, it sounds like, you know, he was reaching for his ID, it sounds like. And then, you know, the officer started shooting. So, you know, if that is the case, which is what it appears to be, it's just wrong. And, you know, there is no excuse or explanation, you know. And I can only surmise that occurred because, like I said, the officer was inexperienced, unnecessarily nervous or scared, and then that could be based upon maybe some, you know, internal prejudice he has himself. Speaking of the officer, you know, the reality is, I've seen in life, not just in police work, but in life in general, is with some people, not all, but, you know, let's say you're to a situation in a where you're working in a, you know, a black community, but you've never, you know, had experience living, working in a black community, or even have any black friends or acquaintances. you know, a lot of people like that have some predetermined prejudices within them, you know, and fears that the rest of us don't have when they then do confront someone who's black. So that kind of is the feeling I get from that situation. You know, because stuff like this happens every day across the country where an officer interacts with a civilian who has a gun permit. And, you know, a shooting doesn't occur. So, yeah, that's my take on the Minnesota one. It just seems it was just a bad shooting all around due to whatever, you know, personal issues or whatever this officer had. You still there? You still hear me?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I was listening and didn't want to interrupt you. But I know I don't want to make any excuse for the officer. But I know that I carry my ID often in my trunk, in my purse. And if an officer ever stops me, I say, look, my purse is in my trunk. Do you want to get it or do you want me to get it? And it's always risky because they're standing right over top of you. Right? Detective Green? Oh, my God, we lost him. No, he's there. Are you there?
You lost me for a minute, yeah.
The internet is crazy right now. Yeah, it's probably just loaded.
Yeah.
I was thinking that when you were trying to call in. I said, people are probably trying to call in right now because I think we're getting pretty popular with this show. But having – you always give them an option because I would rather them get it than me risking than thinking that I had something in my purse or antsy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the young lady did very, very well in keeping the officer distracted with calmness. She did very, 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 very well with that.
Well. Yeah.
She could have been hysterical, you know, and changed his mind about her even being there on the scene. And, you know, that's
Absolutely.
Always a thought. Because once it escalated and he thought he was in trouble and he was actually screaming too.
Yeah. Well, that's where also again, anything I'm saying is not in defense of the officer. I'm just explaining the situation. But I've seen that before, where you know, it applies to any field, but even police work. You don't really know how the person's going to react until you know they're in whatever situation. Yeah, so. You know, this particular guy, he failed, you know. He just completely failed, meaning the officer.
Now, Alton, the other incident, I mean, it looks the same way to us. You don't have to comment on it, but he's on the ground, for God's sake. He's already subdued. He's got four officers around. And I watched that video over and over. I'm going, what did they just take out of his pocket? After he stopped.
So,
yeah, well,
yeah,
no,
so
just be careful about what you know.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say, I think the other situation is a little different. Well, not a little different, very different. Like I said, the Minnesota one seems to be pretty clear. You know, the officer was just, yeah, as far as we can tell, he just seems to be 100% in the wrong. The Louisiana one, I looked at that video, like I said, the Minnesota one I looked at about 20 times. Louisiana, there's two videos. So I watched each of those videos probably about 20 times each. Regular speed, slow speed, rewind, back and forth. So the difference I see in the Minnesota one is when you break it down, it's very different. I'm not Minnesota, the Louisiana one. It's very different. So I think the first thing is that, you know, we got to realize the officers were brought to the scene because a homeless man called and said that the man pulled a gun on him, pulled a gun out of his pocket and told him he had to leave the area. So that was the first reason why the police even came to the scene. So once they were there, you know, I've seen what I think are the full videos, the two full version videos as opposed to the edited. You see the officers come and they first asking the man to get down. Mm-hmm. So as an officer, you know, so far to me everything seems good. You got a man you're approaching because a 911 caller said he has a gun and he pulled it out on him. So this is actually a deadly situation, right? You're assuming this man in front of you's got a gun, he's already pulled it out. So officers, you know, they first, you know, some verbal commands to get down. He doesn't get down. Then they tase him, and with the tase, one officer goes to tackle him to bring him down. So again, this so far to me is all justified, and you know, visually from someone else on the outside, it looks rough and it is rough, right? Because sometimes police work is inherently physical or can be violent, but again, you got to figure, again, this is a man who you've been brought to the scene because he pulled a gun on someone. So, you know, gaining control of this person is your first priority. You know, you want to control him, put handcuffs on, then search for a gun. So, you know, you don't want an opportunity where it can escalate. So you see as he goes down on the ground, what I actually see is, I see the man's left arm, and he actually, for a moment, he has one officer in somewhat of a, looks like a chokehold or something close to a chokehold with his left arm. And this is while he's on his back. So then you see the other officer, he actually is able to remove that left arm from around that officer. Then what we don't see in either video, well, in the one video, we don't really see the man on the ground. We don't really see his right arm. But in the second video that's closer, you can see he's moving his right arm. The man on the ground, he's moving his right arm. And
okay. You
see the one officer on top focused on that right arm. And then what you hear is that officer on top yell, "Gun." So then you see both officers pull out their guns. Now from there, you know, both of the videos, when the shots start happening, you see both video, the camera goes away. So right there, just again, really being unbiased and having, I've investigated police shootings myself. We can't really say right now even what happened because there was a gun found on him. So was the first shot from him? If it was from him, you know, the man on the ground, was it still in his pocket? Was it from his hand? Was it the officer's gun because he was struggling with the officer for the officer's gun because he didn't want the officer to shoot him? Was it the officer by himself? Was it
I didn't see a gun in that video. I didn't see a gun. The only guns I saw in the video was the officer's gun.
The officer's, right. So that's the question. What you mentioned at the end, you see them pull something out of his pocket, right?
That's yeah, but it looked like a baggie, or it looked like a rolled up money. It didn't look like it wasn't big enough to be a weapon.
Well, I couldn't tell. I looked at that 20 times, and I can't tell. It either, to me, it looked like either a knife or a small caliber gun. I couldn't tell though. It could be something else. Absolutely.
It wasn't officer, detective. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. wasn't big enough that it didn't fit in the officer's palm of his hand. Now, unless that was a one of those little Derringers, it was awful tiny. It was tiny.
Yeah, no, definitely. Whatever it was small, definitely. But here's the key. We noticed that when the shooting stopped, the officer went direct to that pocket. So I'm just saying whatever it was something to such a degree that immediately when the shooting stopped, the one officer went direct to that pocket and removed it. That's what I'm thinking, more or less. It was some type of weapon, as opposed to your natural response wouldn't be to go pick up some drugs after such an incident, you know? It would be to take a weapon away.
We got 5 minutes live,
But,
can you tell us in 4 minutes your opinion about body cameras? And we're going to take a break and then come back. Yeah.
Love them. I think it's a great thing for everybody all around. It keeps police in check because they know they're being recorded. And it keeps people in check, too, because people do stuff, you know, anti-police stuff, too. But for everybody, it's a win-win. Keeps everybody in check, both sides of the field.
My issue issue with the body camera is I don't think it should be controlled by
police.
The officers. Yeah.
Right. So now with the body cams, what a lot of people don't know is to activate them, it's the officer, him or herself. Right? They have to push a button or lift the lens cap. That's how to activate it. And then them hitting the button off or lowering it is what shuts it off. But the actual footage in every department I've seen, it's actually stored in a locked area where only certain supervisory levels have access to it.
So that is why they always say we want a chance to look at the footage.
Usually, yeah.
It's not released.
Yeah.
Because normally what we're seeing is somebody else's video, right? Somebody else's phone video.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what the other issue, too, real quick, is liability also. That's a problem. Because what happens also is, let's say an officer's in someone's home. So legally, you've got constitutional protections while in your home. So legally, you know, that's kind of a legal gray area. Well, can we release the footage? We were in somebody's private home, you know. So that then turns into more or less, well, the homeowner has to give us permission to release this video that we recorded in their home. You know, if an incident happens in a bathroom, a locker room, you know, areas where you're expected to have privacy, you know, that's where it gets a little bit gray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But now the Supreme Court has said they can do it. They can use evidence illegally obtained. I mean, will officers do that? Or will they go with the moral rule, with the ethical rule?
Well,
that's why I keep saying.
They go,
Go ahead. They go,
generally go by
what
the court says.
So they just gave them a free run to just kind of do whatever they want, right?
Well, again, tricky.
Got to be honest.
It's tricky. The in general, as of right now, the body, again, with the body cams, you can record anywhere. The question is just really the release of the video.
Hold on a second, audience.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna go into our break. We won't be live, but you can hear this podcast completely through until 6:45 if you just hit the link. We'll still be talking. I'm not even going to take a music break or anything because it's just way too interesting. We're just going to keep talking. And when you hit the link, you go back and hit the podcast, you'll hear it. So go ahead, Detective.
Oh, yeah. So what we find now is just every state across the country, there's legal arguments in reference to the release of the video. That is the real big question. You know, the public, the press will make requests.
Well, that's what they were
for copies.
I mean, we waited so long on Mike Brown. I mean, they were just ripping the city up. They were taking so long with that case.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, you know, especially if it's in a public place. So let's say like the Mike Brown case, it was in public. I mean, that should just simply be, you know, you want a copy of the records. Well, according to the Freedom of Information Act laws, we have to give it to you. It was recorded in public. So, yeah, that should be just as simple as making a copy of the video and handing it over to you. Like, yeah, it shouldn't take weeks or months.
Yeah, I mean, it just kept stirring. It stirred. And, you know, this is the same region. It's the same region. St. Louis, with 92 municipalities. And here we go. A year later, they do it again.
Yeah.
And I think I'm so angry about that, because if we had it contained, the situation with Darren Wilson, Officer Darren Wilson, we may not be here again today, 1 year later. And I can't just, like, you know, act like that's not true.
Yeah.
Well, that sixth shot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the Minnesota thing was just, I can't see any legitimate reason or excuse for that shooting. And I think he was shot four or five times. You know, I just see no need for that. Which I've said this before. I say this frequently, actually. At the end of the day, this comes down to training and leadership. You know if you have
I've
the right leader, yeah, if you have the right leader in place, that leader is going to institute the right training. That leader is going to make sure his or her officers are trained properly, and, you know, in all aspects of law enforcement, community interaction. And then, you know, that's hand in hand with the training. You've got to have proper and effective training. And, you know, every department varies. And you know, I got a ton of solutions for that. You know, I won't say all of them, but one of them off the top of my head is there should be some kind of national standard, which we don't have now. You know,
if they don't have a gun, you go to jail. That listen, if they didn't pull a gun, I'm telling you that, and I said this way back at Mike Brown, officer, the detective Green. We cannot shoot unarmed people. Civilians can't shoot unarmed people. It's just got to be a standard. It's just got to be a standard.
Well, I'll bump it up a notch.
I'll
bump it up a notch, because there are situations where someone unarmed can kill you, right? Where I had a couple of officers I knew as acquaintances who were killed because the other person took the gun from the officer, or another officer who was stabbed to death, you know, and so on. So to me, it kind of varies by the situation. This is just a tough aspect of police work. You know, it gets a little complicated. You know,
okay.
I had another officer. He was killed when the guy pushed him down a staircase. Officer fell and broke his neck on the staircase when the guy pushed him. You know, another cop run over by. You know, this happens all the time. It's the totality of the circumstances. This one, the guy told him, you know, he had his concealed carry, and, you know, as far as I've heard, the gun was still holstered. He wasn't reaching for it, you know.
So what is our universal solution on a federal level?
I tell you right now.
How can we stop these shootings?
I'll tell you a couple. Right. I have many. But I'll tell you a couple easy solutions. Easy. One is, whenever these things happen, who do the agencies call for? Who do they bring in? They bring in the Department of Justice, right? Hey, Department of Justice, come and investigate this. Hey, Department of Justice, come in and make recommendations and so on. You've had some departments that had history. Long run histories of abuse, and the Department of Justice actually have provided oversight over those police departments until those systematic, prejudicial issues have been resolved. So, on that same kind of level, I would say, hey, U.S. Department of Justice, create a proper training program, and make every single police department in the nation have to train their officers in this particular training program. So at least we have a national standard, you know. At least we have at least one national training course that every officer in the nation will have to go through, which is something we don't have now at all. You know, every state right now varies. You can go to one state, police academies a month long. Another state, the police academy is 6 months long. You know, there's no uniformity, so to speak. So I think that's one big issue. You know, me personally, I've had an idea for years that I think would work in every community. And that idea would be have officers, as part of their training, connect with community members and have those officers for the duration of their shift actually live with members of the community, meaning 8 a.m., officer shift begins, that officer goes to whoever's house and participates there while the family gets ready for school, for work, eating breakfast, whatever, and so on. Just so, you know, the officer can get a feel that, hey, this black guy, this black woman, the only difference between, you know, a white woman and a white man is skin color. That's it. You know, we're all the same. And, you know, there's no difference. There's no need to walk out there and you approach somebody who's black and you automatically have fear in you or you're worried. I think the only way to prevent that is you have to immerse the officers in the community, you know, deeply. You know, I'd also love to see, you know, most of the officers actually come from the community they serve. You know, it's much harder to be biased against somebody who's your neighbor or who you actually know or you actually grew up around.
You know, an officer said that today. He said, I don't care who you are, what color you are, what gender that you claim you are. I just don't want you to think that you're privileged and can do whatever the hell you want. And he said it like that. Whatever you want, just because the law says you can.
Mm-hmm. I agree, yes.
Morals should come above the legislation.
100%.
You can't just, right, you can't gallivant around my kids doing what you want to do because the law says you can.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly, 100%. You know, there's no morals. Suddenly you can just kind of like do what you want and get away with it. And it's just not acceptable. And I keep saying that, morals over legislation.
Oh, yeah.
Because
absolutely.
People are not going to change their mind about you, you know, walking around with a, how do I want to say this on the air? Well, this is my show. A dildo wrapped around your waist, okay? And you're out in public and you're teaching my kid this.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're teaching our young people this. And they saw that and they said, what is that? Now we have to explain your illicit sex or your view of your freedom to our kids.
Yeah.
You're exploiting our kids, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
And so it just boils down to morals versus versus the legislation. Just because they said you can do this openly doesn't mean that you have to do it openly. Sex between a man and a woman is still in a private place. If you did it outside, you would get arrested like everybody else.
Yes. Well, you know what? This is a little non-PC, you know, non-politically correct for some people, but I'll be honest with you. I've seen it firsthand. The PC nature of society now has even changed that. So I've had situations where we've caught, let's say, heterosexual people having sex in public, or in their car on the street, you know, where people can see into the car, and those people have either been arrested or given a citation. What I've seen now in recent years, though, is that if it is a same-sex couple doing it, they seem to be getting the privilege in the past where no one wants to touch it. They're worried. They're like, ooh, these are two gay guys or a lesbian couple. We don't want to arrest or ticket them because we might get in trouble by our supervisors or so on, as though we're
oh my God.
Targeting them. So that's what I see. I actually see them getting away with it now these days.
Oh my God. And but we would get in trouble.
Yeah, I'm seeing the flip side is exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Arrested or ticketed.
Right. And so you open a can of canker worms, and the enemy in the spiritual atmosphere of demonic force just keeps opening the cans. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's like you can't stop it. Once you go lawless, you can't stop it.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
There's no boundaries. And
no.
When people get that in their head, how do you undo it?
It's pretty hard.
It's pretty hard. You can't undo it. I just call it a can of canker worms. I said, this is going to be a can of canker worms from the very beginning. And it's just, it's going on and on. The Supreme Court's doing it. You know, when they're given 6 months for rape. I mean, it's just like, okay, everybody,
yeah.
Just, you don't have to follow the law anymore. Just do whatever the hell you want. When you come see
yeah.
us, we'll slap you on the wrist and keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that, I mean, you mentioned the rape. Yeah, that one recent case where the new thing in the judicial system is if you're privileged and have a lot of money, like that's an excuse to get away with certain crimes. The term is escaping me now that they give now. I forget the name of the term, but it's an actual term in quote unquote condition. That's booming around the legal system where, you know, that one kid from, Stanford, I saw an interview with a witness, you know, he found the guy raping an unconscious girl behind, a dumpster.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that. And then, you know, they see him, they say, what are you doing? He gets up, he runs, they actually chase him down and catch him, hold him for the police. You know, and his excuse is, you know, it's the drunken college culture or whatever, and that's
right,
why it's
right,
okay.
Right, right.
And then,
yeah.
Yeah, then the judge, he's supposed to hand down a sentence. The judge says, hey, it would be worse for this kid to spend years in jail than for him not to. So that's why I'm going to, right, give him 6 months, exactly. That's.
It's ridiculous.
Know. It's mind-numbing, yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It empowers the abuser.
Yes.
And this
yeah,
is
absolutely.
What I this is the same thought I had about Darren Wilson. It empowered all the other 92 municipalities. And if I'm not mistaken, the Department of Justice ordered them to take more training.
Well,
and
so yeah, for example, that's what happened in Ferguson, yes, Department of Justice.
Yeah.
Obviously
it didn't work because we have this a year again in the same region.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I've noticed that also. Policing techniques also vary by region and municipality and state.
Mm-hmm. Go quick. Let's see how many seconds
you know,
I got.
Just a quick example. Quick example.
Yeah.
If you go to most police departments on the West Coast now, you'll see they'll do textbook things. If they pull over a car or the guy's supposed to have a gun, you know, they'll stay at their vehicle, you know, 100 feet away, order the person out, hands up, turn around, walk backwards, you know, textbook that. Whereas if you go to some other departments, what you'll see is officers just rush right to the car and just
we're gone. We love Detective Green. We're gone. We're out of here. We're gonna have you on your time on the 20th at 12 noon. We're gonna be live. We're gonna come back and we're gonna touch the subject again. We will see you next week, next Thursday, on Social Justice Initiative.